Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey.
Hey, if you are following through this journey, Numbers is going to be a breath of fresh air outside of a census. Like, I mean, there are a couple chapters that are just kind of like long and maybe arduous, but we're back into a more narrative style of reading. Okay. So if you kind of like more of the flow of like Genesis and Exodus, Leviticus was a lot of just like a lot to just kind of climb through, a lot of mud to trudge through. I don't want to speak negatively about the Bible, but I mean, we just got to kind of be honest. Like, Leviticus isn't the most like entertaining, but Numbers, we're going to get some really, really fun stories. When we do the first episode of an entirely new book, I kind of like to give you context for the chapters that we're reading, but I also want to give you kind of context for that book. So we'll try to cover a lot in the time that we have together. If you have not done the reading for the day, pause this recording, stop the recording, go do the reading. If you've done the reading, let's dive in. Like always, we got context clues first. We got a lot of context clues, okay? One of the big things that you're going to have to realize, and I'm going to reiterate this, though, you know, as we keep going through the Torah, is that the entire Torah is a chiasm, all right? So if you look at Genesis and Deuteronomy, they're going to end the exact same way. So Genesis and Deuteronomy would be the bookends of the Torah. They would be the outside of the chiasm. And if you look at how Genesis ends, Genesis is going to end with a patriarch. His name is Jacob, and he's going to bless the 12 tribes of Israel by blessing his 12 sons. Okay, so you have a dying patriarch, a man, a male leader on his deathbed, kind of giving a prophetic word to his 12 sons, aka the 12 tribes. When you get to Deuteronomy, you have Moses who is dying. So you have another male leader who's dying, who's going to give instruction and prophecy to the 12 tribes of Israel. Okay, so Genesis and Deuteronomy are your bookends. And then on the insides, okay, as we move in, we're going to get Exodus and Numbers. So Exodus and Numbers are mirror images of each other. Numbers, the book of Numbers, doesn't make sense without the book of Exodus. Because everything that you read in Numbers, you have to go find its parallel, mirrored partner in the book of Exodus. Okay, so Numbers and Exodus work together. They're not designed to be read separately. It's kind of like Luke and Acts. Numbers and Exodus mirror one another. They parallel one another. So I'll kind of go through this really quick. Exodus chapter 18, we get Jethro. Okay, in Exodus chapter 18, Jethro gives Moses some advice. That's his father-in-law. In Numbers chapter 10, guess what? Jethro's back to give Moses some more advice. In Exodus chapter 15, we get a three-day journey to Sinai. In Numbers chapter 10, we get a three-day journey from Sinai. Okay, in Exodus 15, the Israelites complain about water. In Numbers chapter 11, they just have an unspecified complaint. Okay, in Exodus 16, we're going to get a narrative about manna and quail. In Numbers chapter 11, we're going to get a narrative about manna and quail. In Exodus 18, leaders are appointed to assist Moses. And in Numbers chapter 11, leaders are appointed to assist Moses. In Exodus 15, we have Miriam's song of praise. And in Numbers chapter 11, we have Miriam and Aaron rebel. In Exodus 17, Israel defeats Amalek or the Amalekites. And in Numbers chapter 14, Israel is going to defeat Amalek or the Amalekites. In Exodus 17, we get water from a rock. In Numbers chapter 20, we get water from a rock. In Exodus chapter 32, people are going to sacrifice to other gods. In Numbers chapter 25, the people of Israel are going to sacrifice to other gods. In Exodus chapter 32, we're going to get killing of apostates demanded. And then the same is going to happen in Numbers chapter 25. Exodus chapter 32, the Levite status is enhanced. And then in Numbers chapter 25, the Levites, through one character by the name of Phinehas, the Levite status is enhanced again. In Exodus chapter 32, there's going to be a plague on the people. And in Numbers chapter 25, there's going to be a plague on the people. So these two books are designed to mirror one another. Okay. So that's like massive context. that if you're just trying to read Numbers, the book of Numbers by itself, you may be thinking, man, it's a random hodgepodge of stories. These stories don't really make cohesive sense. Like the individual pericopes may make sense. I don't understand how this fits together as a literary unit. Well, as a literary unit, it's designed to actually be commentary on Exodus. So Exodus and Numbers, they literally need one another. Okay, you should be reading Exodus with Numbers, and you should be reading Numbers with Exodus. So if you think about the chiasm, you've got Jacob on his deathbed in Genesis. You got Moses on his deathbed in Deuteronomy. Then you move in a book. And you got Numbers and Exodus that mirror each other. And then you got Leviticus in the middle. And in the center of the center of the center, you have the Day of Atonement. Okay, so that's kind of like if you like are looking at the first five books of Moses. I'll give you a little bit more just context clues. One other thing about the book of Numbers is that Numbers is the title that we get based on the Greek translation of this Hebrew book. In Hebrew, this book is just called In the Wilderness or Through the Wilderness because they are in the wilderness, okay? This book is going to document the 40 years that the people of Israel are in the wilderness, and they're in the wilderness for an entire generation to allow everyone from the generation that came out of Egypt to die. We're going to get to a point in the book of Numbers where Joshua and Caleb are going to be two of the 12 spies that go out to spy out the land of Canaan. 10 spies are going to come back with a negative report. They're going to turn the entire heart of Israel away from taking the land. And so God says, all right, great. All of you are going to die except Joshua and Caleb. This entire generation is just going to have to die because you had no faith, because you tested me, because you didn't believe in what I said. Everyone, I was faithful to bring you out of Egypt, but it's your children that are going to have to possess the land. So the book of Numbers is the Israelites' journey in the wilderness or through the wilderness. And in Hebrew, that's actually the title for this book, In the Wilderness or Through the Wilderness. That is a way better title than Numbers. Now, the reason that the book got that title in the Septuagint or the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible is because the people are going to get counted, okay? Now, part of the reason that the people are going to get counted is because the people of Israel need to form an army because they're going to invade, okay? So if you think about it, they have a constitution, that's the law. They've got a priest, a priestly system, it's Leviticus. They've got a tabernacle, they've got the presence of God or a way to commune with God. And now they're gonna have an army. Okay, they're ready to take the land. They're ready to be a nation. Okay, they have a constitution. They've got a priesthood that can mediate their relationship with God. But the only thing that they don't have is an army. And the census accounts that are here in the book of Numbers is proof that they do have what they need in order to have an army. So they are ready to invade the land. They don't think that they're ready, which is why they have to wander around for 40 years. So that's why the book is named Numbers, because of the census. But the census only accounts for a small fraction of the book. Okay, really what's happening in this book is that they're wandering around in the wilderness. The reason that they're in the wilderness is because they have rebelled against God. They should be in the land, but they're not in the land. And so they're in the wilderness, okay, for 40 years. So I actually prefer the Hebrew title for this book over the Greek title, which obviously has informed the English title of the book. So, and that Hebrew title comes from chapter 1, verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness. Okay, so the Hebrew title comes from that phrase right there, in the wilderness. The book of Numbers has three movements, okay? Three distinct kind of movements. The first is the people are camped at Mount Sinai. This is Numbers chapters 1 through 10. The people are at Mount Sinai. This is the part of the book that they were, even had they obeyed God and taken possession of the land, they would have still been camped at Mount Sinai for the same amount of time. Okay, so Numbers chapter 1 through 10, nothing bad has happened yet. They are camped out at the foot of Mount Sinai. They have built the tabernacle. We're still following the same like journey. They've come out of Egypt. They've gotten to Mount Sinai. They received the Ten Commandments, they received the law, they built the tabernacle, and they're still chilling at the foot of Mount Sinai. Numbers chapter 11 to 21 is going to be them in the wilderness. trekking their way through the wilderness, wandering around, all right? And then chapters 22 to 36, they are actually on the border and they are camped out about to cross the Jordan. The three distinct sections of the book of Numbers is actually demarcated or marked by the geographical location of the people. Okay, the first movement of the book, first 10 chapters, Numbers chapter 1 to 10, they're camped out at Mount Sinai. Second movement of the book, they're in the wilderness. And the third movement of the book, I want to say they're at Padan Aram, but or Padan Aram, but I don't know that for sure. I'd have to like Google that. But I'm pretty sure that Numbers chapter 22 to 36, they're camped at a place called Padan Aram, which means that they're literally at the place where they could cross over the Jordan and go and take possession of the land.
Family, the wait is over. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, is out now and available everywhere books are sold. Literally today, I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I signed a bunch of copies at a physical location. So you can grab this book at a physical Barnes & Noble, or you can go to a Books A Million or Amazon or anywhere books are sold and grab a copy. If you enjoy reading the Bible from an ancient perspective, if you understand that the beauty of Scripture is actually knowing it in context, then you'll love this book. And if there's any chaos in your personal life, I think that reading the Bible from an ancient perspective can actually help to crush the chaos in your life. I think this book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I really do. I think we wrote a good one. I think you should get a copy today. All right, back to the episode.
All right, that's a lot about just the book of Numbers. So let's kind of get into the chapters that we are reading today. When we get into the beginning of the book of Numbers, it's obvious that we jump right into a census. Now, there's tons of debates about, should we trust the literal numbers that we have in the beginning of the book of Numbers? I'm not going to get into the weeds of these details, okay? That is literal dissertations have been written around, are these numbers factual? Either way, whether you believe the numbers are factual or whether you think they are an exaggeration, the goal of the author is to communicate one major concept. And that is the tabernacle represents a new Eden. It's a garden, so cherubim woven into the curtains. Everything about the tabernacle is all Eden language, okay? So what we have in the tabernacle is a microcosm of Eden. We have a representation of Eden. We've talked about this already in Exodus and in Leviticus, that the tabernacle is like an oasis, an Eden oasis that's going through the wilderness. So there's wilderness surrounding a garden. Which is the same exact image that we get in the first three chapters of the book of Genesis. Okay, God establishes a garden surrounded by wilderness. And the call that God, the command that God gives to Adam and Eve when they are in a garden surrounded by wilderness is to multiply and be fruitful, to fill the land and subdue it. And the numbers, whether you take them literally, whether you take them symbolically, whatever the intention of the author was in terms of these numbers, the theological point is that the people of Israel have multiplied and been fruitful. They have an Eden blessing at the foot of Mount Sinai. While they are at the foot of Mount Sinai, and now that they have built the tabernacle, they are fruitful and they're multiplying. They are experiencing the Edenic blessing. They're experiencing the blessing of multiplication through children, okay? And so these numbers, whether you say, oh, no, these numbers are just real, then the reason they would be reported is to communicate that people have multiplied and they're fruitful as a result of prioritizing the tabernacle, which is a new Eden. Let's say the numbers are an exaggeration, which wouldn't be malicious on the part of the authors. The authors would have known that their audience, not us, but their actual audience, wouldn't have taken the numbers here literally. Let's just say these are exaggerated numbers. Then the point would still be to communicate that the presence of the tabernacle has brought humans back into Eden where they are able to multiply and be fruitful. So this garden that's surrounded by wilderness is a place where we can multiply and be fruitful, fill the land and subdue it. Okay. The numbers here are an echo back to Eden. That is the theological significance. Okay. So let's not get distracted by whatever else. And now, if you're a Bible nerd and you really want to chase down, you know, are the numbers real? Are they not? What do they mean? Then be happy. I've sat through multiple classes in seminary where we talk through that. For the average layperson, I think that the only thing that's really important is to know that the proof that this tabernacle works is that we get Edenic promises fulfilled by being in proximity to the garden. That the people are not in the wilderness, that they are in a garden, and that there is a hedge of protection around them, and that the garden is a moving oasis through the wilderness. And as long as they have it, then they can actually multiply and be fruitful in the way that God's called them to do. The second thing that we're supposed to see, actually throughout the entire Leviticus and Numbers, is order. That in order to count the people, you can't have chaos. And order being imposed over chaos is a massive theme of the book of Genesis, especially the first couple of chapters of Genesis. And we're going to get that here in the book of Numbers, that the people are in an ordered account. Okay. They're being counted. Counting people is a way to practice order. All right. Okay. So that's a massive theme. Another theme in this section is going to be concentric circles. So you're going to see, and you may get lost as you're reading this, but there's going to be very strict details on how the people are to encamp themselves around the tabernacle. And the Levitical priesthood is going to get divided into four clans, and those four clans are going to surround the tabernacle. So there's no tribe that's in direct contact with the tabernacle. So on the east side, okay, the door of the tabernacle is facing the east. So the Levites are a buffer between the people of the tribe of Judah. Judah is right here on the east. They are at the front of the tabernacle, but the Levites are in between them, okay? And the same is going to be true on the north, south, and west sides of the tabernacle. No tribe is just going to bump up against the tabernacle. No, the tabernacle is the tent that's at the center. And then you're going to have Levitical tents all around it on the north, south, east, and west. And then after those clans or after those Levitical tents, then you're going to have three tribes on the east, three tribes in the north, three tribes in the west, and three tribes in the south. And total, you're going to get all 12 tribes. Okay, now, there are technically 13 tribes. Here's another little caveat, okay? Jacob, instead of having the tribe of Joseph, he takes the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh, which gets us up to 13 tribes, okay? So within Joseph, we get two tribes. So we get 13. But the tribe of Levi is not counted as a tribe because that tribe belongs to God. So they're not going to be in the army and they're not going to get property. So the Levites belong to God. So you get 12 normal tribes and you get a special tribe, okay? So there are 13 tribes technically. So you're going to get 12 tribes, three on the east, three on the west, three at the north, three on the south, encamped around the tabernacle, and you're going to get the Levites as a buffer around the tabernacle. That is what chapter 2 is really like explaining. Okay, and without a visual, it's kind of hard to understand that that is what it's explaining. Now, concentric circles is the same thing that we have in Genesis, okay? You have a tree in the middle of a garden. There's a garden that's inside of Eden, okay? So you get the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then you get a garden, then you get Eden, then you get wilderness, okay? In the same way, you're going to get the Holy of Holies, then the tabernacle, then the Levites, then the Israelites, then the wilderness, okay? So we're back to like concentric circles, that the glory of God is going to emanate from the center of the circle. This is mirrored realities, both in Genesis and now in the book of Numbers. Last thing, we're definitely, sorry, I didn't even announce that we got into our nerdy nuggets. We've been in our nerdy nuggets for a long time. Last thing that I want you to be aware of is this language that we're going to find, which is work it and keep it. Okay, so the Levites are going to be compared to Adam and Eve. Now, that's going to be huge for the remainder of the book, because although we studied Leviticus, which is a book to the Levites, the book of Numbers is going to talk about the Levites a lot. Okay, the Levites are going to be a major, major player in the book of Leviticus. All right, here's our timeless truth for the day, is that Numbers is an unfortunate story, that something that should have taken maybe a year or two ended up taking 40 years. Because God will really, he'll give you what you want. Okay. He respects free will. And so, but it's not hopeless. Their children end up doing what they are not able to do. And so that's a timeless truth, that there's lots of things that God wants to do with all of us. But if we don't have the faith to actually obey God, then he will use someone else. He'll use our children. God's plan isn't contingent upon you, but you can definitely involve yourself in God's plan if you choose to. So that is a timeless truth. That is true today. That's true forever, that God is not going to make anybody be a part of his plan. All right. We got lots of context clues. We got our nerdy nuggets. We got a lot of nerdy nuggets today. And we got a timeless truth that we can always follow God's plan with faith, or we can get left behind. And God will raise up somebody else who actually does have faith. All right. I'll see you tomorrow as we continue our trek through the wilderness through the book of Numbers. I love you guys. I'm so proud of you. Hey, if you're on a streak, don't stop. Keep going. If you're not on a streak, today's a good day to start. I mean, just all you got to do is watch again tomorrow and you'll be on a 2-day streak. I love you guys. So proud of you.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at The Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.